So, Mike, welcome back. Another tech segment.
Yes, apparently.
Another glorious beer garden.
It is. Well, it's the same glorious beer garden. It's just more glorious.
True.
Do you remember how much it was raining when we did B? It's so much nicer today.
We got wet and very, very, very cold.
Oh, we got wet. Also, it was raining.
Before we start today's exploration of geo stuff, I would like to make a brief announcement.
Oh.
Regular listeners to this podcast, all three of them, will be aware...
So my mum and your mum.
My mum doesn't listen. Your mum doesn't listen to this.
My mum is under strict instructions never to listen to this.
No, they will be aware of our hero and occasional whipping boy, Tim Berners-Lee.
What a ledge.
Who, in the last 2 weeks, has proven himself to be something of a cockwomble.
What? Really?
Yeah. Tim Berners-Lee, father of the web, father of freedom
father
of information,
mother, really.
And
dick pic extraordinaire.
Connected data, has signed off on a new standard, if you will, to introduce DRM, digital rights management. This is basically encryption and ownership of stuff as a web standard. So prior to this, everybody had to do their own thing, right?
Yeah.
It was kind of a bit haphazard, and we were starting to make some progress towards actually information just being free.
Father of free information now wants to everyone to have rights and everyone has to pay each other for doing stuff.
Well, he has rubber-stamped / approved
Sony have got to
the standard. So a dark day, I'm afraid. A dark day for the web. A dark day for Tim Berners-Lee.
Do you know what's happened? Is someone has found his database of dick pics and they're blackmailing him.
We can only hope.
Tim, just let him... Let him release
Tim,
it.
If you're
no
listening to
judge
this,
you.
And you are,
of course,
just let it all out.
Literally and figuratively. And we already have. You just need to make it public.
So, Geo.
Yes.
I'm not going to lie, this is one of those podcast topics that is utterly broad. Geo
utterly
is the
broad.
Beginning of many, many words.
It is, like the rock people, like
geology.
Geography.
And
jog on. No?
Anyway, so geo from the Greek, meaning literally of the earth, I think.
Right, sure.
Didn't do Greek.
Fine.
You did Latin, right?
I did Latin, yeah.
Yeah, so
I did a bit of Greek for
no
a short
help to us at all.
Time. That's a joke in
As ever, by the way, anybody who's studying Latin, it's never useful. we always need
an anal
Greek.
Sex joke in there somewhere, but I'm like, nothing. Let's please move on.
So we had to dial it in a little bit. And so what we've done is we've taken geo and we've applied some tech and we've dialed this into, this is basically the GPS episode.
Basically, we're just going to talk about the movie The Core, where they drill through the earth to reignite the world's core so that the world doesn't stop turning or something. I forget.
We could do.
Shall we just do that instead? Because I quite like that film. I think it's got Dennis Quaid in it.
That's what I do. I drink. And I know things.
And anyway, that was The Core. If you enjoyed that, feel free to watch Event Horizon.
Honestly, God, I didn't know what you were doing. I thought we were
going back to
I thought
going
you were
back
to
GPS. GPS, of course, everybody knows what this is, right?
A global positioning system.
Holy cow.
Yeah.
Global positioning system. And it's a solution to a long-term problem that mankind has had.
Where is your wife?
Just where are you?
Your wife's gone down the pub. You don't know where she is.
Where
you
is your
find
wife?
Your iPhone. You
where
go, oh, no,
you?
She's still in the Weybridge. It's fine. Oh, now she's at the taxi rank.
Where is your boat?
Your boats, for example.
And historically, this is something that we've solved. You know, positioning and navigation is something that we've solved. We worked out to
one
do
of them
maps.
Telescopes with the half-circle job.
Yeah, we came up with sextants.
That's the badger, yes.
And sextants, kind of useful. They allowed us to grab latitudinal data. So a sextant will give you your latitude. However, longitude...
I'm literally just giggling at the word sextant, I'm sorry. Latitudinal data, yes, go on.
Longitude proved to be quite hard.
Right.
Because it requires...
Been there.
...time as a factor.
Right.
Now, go on, you can probably work this out.
So
why?
No, I know, I can't work it out.
No?
Okay. Remember last time when we tried to explain exponential to me?
Yes.
So latitude is what?
Latitude is that way around.
Right, this is an audio podcast.
It's fine, because I'm not convinced.
It's the horizontal.
I believe it's the horizontal axis.
Longitudinal is north to south, and the other one is east to west, but actually it's a sphere, sort of, it's an egg shape, but it's round. Okay, right.
So latitude you can work out by observation. Yeah. Longitude you need to take into account time, because the world spins. So you need to know how far it's spun based on the thing you're looking at, like the moon or the stars or whatever.
Oh, so you
whatever.
Position yourself looking at the stars or the North Star traditionally or whatever.
Absolutely.
Okay.
So
totally game this.
effectively what we've got is the situation where the Earth rotates at a steady rate of 360 degrees per day, right. 15 degrees per hour.
15 degrees an hour?
Yeah, which means a direct relationship between time and longitude.
Right. Well, we're really getting into the hard stuff quick, aren't we? Does it get easier from here? Because
It kind of does. Let's go back to...
Is this why we did the tech segment first this time? Because you didn't want me too pissed.
It helps. I'm not going to lie. It does help.
Slightly more sober.
So bear in mind, at the time was a problem on boats. Because most of the mechanisms for recording time were either woefully inaccurate, like losing an hour a day,
right.
Or the really accurate ones required a long pendulum.
It's going to be a lot giggling from me, apparently. Well, I mean, do I need to make a joke about that?
No.
It requires a long pendulum. Go on, so please move on.
And you can imagine how well, say, a grandfather clock that requires this...
Sure.
Swinging.
It's got that big old swinging pendulum, right?
You can imagine how well that works on a boat that's going up and down.
Yeah, it's going up and down.
Yeah.
So it needs to be steady, right?
Yeah,
sure, of course.
Or decent clockwork, and the clockwork at the time was shit.
Right.
There is actually a fantastic, really fantastic story just on this.
Which you're not going to tell me, so let's move on.
I'm going to tell you the end of it, and then I'm going to tell you where you can go to get the rest of it if you're interested. Right. A chap called John Harrison, who's a carpenter from Yorkshire.
John Harrison. The character from Star Trek Into Darkness, who turned out to be Khan?
No.
Okay.
But an interesting linkage. Did they know that when they made the film? Probably
not. It's J.J. Abrams. Everything's wheels with him, so maybe.
Anyway, carpenter from Yorkshire invents a really, really good clockwork clock. Really accurate.
Casio calculator watch.
No, it's called the Harrison H4. It was the fourth one that he'd built, and it was the first one that actually worked. And it meant...
So really, it was the first one he built then, wasn't it? It's like saying, I made a clock, but actually I made a sandwich.
No, they all worked, but they didn't work at sea, or they weren't quite accurate enough. Which meant that by about 1760, we could take decent clocks out, which meant that we can now see where our ships were lengthways as well as sideways.
Sun's out, clock's out.
Yeah, so navigation, time, you see, we're getting to
with you.
The invention of radio changes this.
Marconi.
Boom.
What was that, television?
Marconi invented radio. Television is just radio, but
powered
moving
off of
pictures.
Potato.
No.
Oh, okay.
Don't think so. He might have done.
We're both looking at Cholula, our producer, like, and we're like, can you confirm it was a potato?
There are moments, dear listener, when Mike will drop something like that on me and say, did Marconi power his first? And I begin to doubt myself.
He knew that Marconi was the guy. Maybe
I knew
potato
he invented it,
right.
But I don't know. Was there a King Edwards sat behind the scenes calling the shots? Radio changes all sorts of stuff because all of a sudden what we can do is we can take time and broadcast it.
Right. Yeah,
we don't need
to
carry a clock on the boat anymore.
Yeah, sure, we don't need
really accurate timepieces or chronometers.
O'clock.
You just tune in and you go, it's 5 o'clock.
Yeah.
The first people to do this were the US Navy.
Right.
They broadcast out of the Navy Yard. And then later on, Nova Scotia, Halifax.
Right, okay.
Yeah, middle of fucking nowhere, but there we go.
Was it just...
And
like really, obviously, is it really central? But no, it's like super north.
No, it's kind of like it covers the Atlantic,
right? Okay.
Atlantic shipping,
okay,
right?
Okay.
And besides which, these are high-powered radios. They can
reach a
lot of the way around the globe.
A lot of potatoes.
One of my favourite little facts about when they evolved this kind of radio transmission of time, which is relevant, I promise, is the central for European broadcast that became one of the most popular commercial broadcast frequencies.
Right.
Was the Eiffel Tower.
Oh, yeah, because it's an enormous iron...
They literally
used to transmit
navigational time signals from the top of the Eiffel Tower.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, why not? You've got all that iron knocking about.
I don't know if they still do. I mean, this is 1910, so...
Right, okay.
They probably don't, because, well, we're talking about GPS, so...
Yeah, people don't know that the Eiffel Tower was actually originally called the Pieffel Tower, and it was because it was built by a pie company.
Really?
Yeah, they made cherry pies.
I'm trying to work out if you're fucking
no,
with me.
No, you're definitely fucking with you. The Pieffel Tower up, come on. I was like, oh, this is getting cut out, but now they're definitely staying in. This is the best. So, anyway, moving on. The Pieffel... I like doing the tech segment first. This is much more fun. The Pieffel Tower.
Excuse me whilst we take a brief pause whilst I beat him to death with his own shoes. So this is kind of the history of navigation, which isn't directly related to satellite navigation, obviously, except that it is navigation, and it starts to draw this correlation between radio
signalling. I should say, geo is... We're talking about satellites based on geo.
Yeah.
Right.
And geo things as they relate to geo, as in GPS, rather than world.
Stationary
Earth.
And whatever. Yeah, sure.
Yeah.
Okay.
So...
Shut up, CBS.
The idea that you have this central source of data, like a signal that, whether it's telling you the time or whether or not it's telling you where you are or what have you,
has
been something that they've been chasing for ages.
Right.
So, why does GPS come about?
Because it had to.
Well, it's kind of inevitable, but it's made inevitable by a couple of precursors.
Yeah.
We've got the space race, we've got the Russians learning Sputnik 1, launching even. They've launched Sputnik 1, and this gets scientists to thinking, well, hang on a minute, we know that we need radio signals to coordinate.
And we've got this thing super high up.
And we've got this thing super high up that goes around the whole world.
Yeah, yeah.
Can we not build some kind of global positioning system?
Good Lord.
Oh my God. And of course, like all good ideas, the first people to actually make this happen are the US military.
Right.
Not because they have the good idea, but because they recognise the military potential for knowing where everything is, so they jump on it in a big way. And they get cracking on developing the technology that's needed, but also the maths that's needed, the theories that are needed, and launching a metric ton of satellites into space to make this system work. So we're now at about 1978.
Sorry, very quickly.
Yep.
So the space race, was that almost based off of GPSing? Was that why they were trying to get into space? Or they were actually just trying to shoot bombs at each other?
It was mostly they were just enormous...
Like, it's like a big PR thing, right?
PR thing.
Yeah. We're in space, bitches.
Yeah, and the space race had kind of culminated around about 1969, early 1970s, because the Russians kind of ran out of money.
Yeah.
And people stopped watching. We're in 1978.
Right. Ooh.
And the US military commissioned a project called Navstar.
Right.
Which is now what we would refer to as GPS.
Okay, right.
It was actually invented by a team of people, but the guy who's credited with inventing it is Roger L. Easton, along with Bradford Parkinson and, my favourite of the bunch, Ivan Agetting. Ivan A. Getting.
I'm a getting it.
Ivan Agetting.
So he sounds like a defector to me. Doesn't sound like he's from Idaho, does he?
Quite possibly. Ivan is probably not a local.
Right.
But it doesn't matter, even if he is. I mean, I haven't traced his family tree. Yeah, he could be a good old Ohio boy.
Yeah,
it's all good. What the US military ended up doing is launching a bunch of satellites over a number of years. Getting stuff into space is hard.
Yep.
Getting stuff into space so it works when it gets there is even harder.
Sure.
And getting stuff into space so that it's in a decent orbit.
Right.
Which is where you want it to be.
Yeah, it's quite hard to like get it to exactly the right place, right?
Yeah.
You could overshoot, you could undershoot, whatever.
Yeah,
it's
and if you
super
undershoot,
fucking hot getting it there and all that.
The odds
stuff,
are very good it's going to come crashing down.
Yeah,
if you overshoot, it's no use.
Yeah.
And the GPS satellites orbit at a distance of, I think it's like 100,000 or something crazy, which is way, way down on.
Is it higher than that bloke who jumped out of that hot air balloon from the stratosphere?
Yeah, otherwise he would have been ducking satellites.
Oh, that's true. Like in gravity.
Possibly it's like, this becomes like the billionaire equivalent of driving along, hanging out of a truck and taking out mailboxes.
It's one of those things where it's like, you can't imagine how high it is because it is that ridiculously high.
Yeah, it's ridiculous.
Like
it's
at university.
not just you, Mike.
Hey-o!
Not just you. But yeah, so this is still a way down on something that you may have heard of called geosynchronous orbit.
Yes.
Which
is
a distance that you need to be away from the Earth in order that the thing stays in the same point over the Earth. Geosynchronous, geostationary.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you know, this. Now I'm going to blow your mind.
Wait,
because
what?
Geostationary was popularized by Arthur C. Clarke, who wrote 2001.
The Arthur C. Clarke.
And they call it the Clarke orbit or the Clarke, I think it's the Clarke belt maybe as well.
It's amazing.
So I don't think he invented it, but he certainly popularized it enough that it became a, he certainly popularized the idea of putting satellites up there for telecommunications. Because, you know, genius.
Well, this is bizarrely, when we're talking about satellites and orbits, that is amazing.
Yeah.
But geosync is brilliant because the satellite stays in one point relative to the bit of the Earth it's above. So as the Earth spins, it spins at the same speed.
Yeah, which is...
But at the same time, it has to be...
Does it have little rockets?
No, it's
just
in orbit.
Gravity?
But it's orbiting
at
exactly
the same
place,
then?
Because that's the nature of orbit.
So
the further out you go, the faster you go.
Right, so the ones that stay in the same place, are they higher or lower than
much
the ones
higher.
That spin? So because gravity is weaker, so they stay in the one place.
We're getting into embarrassing physics mode.
Okay.
Let's just say that it is, because reasons.
Before we move on, and I might be ruining your amazing fact.
I don't think so.
How many satellites are there?
What?
Like, as a guesstimate, do you know how many
GPS
satellites there
satellites
are?
Or general satellites?
Just general satellites rocking around the Earth.
Tens of thousands.
my question has always been, how do they fire them rockets up into space through all them satellites? How do they not know that a satellite's not going to crash into them?
They kind of
They track every single satellite and then go, oh, we got a gap, let's go.
Yeah.
Okay, well, that was simpler than I was hoping.
But there is an absolute ton of crap floating around in orbit
so there's
right
like huge amount of space
Considering
junk,
we only started putting stuff there in the 1960s.
Because it's like all the bits that fall off of rockets and all that kind of shit. It's all just floating around. So how are satellites not just getting destroyed all the time by all the shit we've left
They kind of are.
Oh, okay.
Not all the time. But also, don't forget, there's quite a lot of space up there.
Yeah.
This isn't like the
it's
M25.
It's literally called space.
Yeah. There's a lot of room.
They've named it after how much room there is.
And also, things up there are fairly, generally speaking, quite small. No, your average satellite is not huge.
Yeah, I suppose, actually, I've never seen one in real life. So
probably about the size of two ping pong tables, give or take, which, relative to the amount of space that it has. Anyway, so we end up with the Americans have launched a whole bunch of satellites, and they've proven the concept that it works.
1978.
Yeah, and military applications, 100% there.
Brilliant.
They're really happy.
Star Wars.
They can now find out exactly where their tanks are when they're shooting each other. Because
Jason
Bourne
watching them from space, finding his face in a tube station.
Yeah,
because that's how satellites work.
Yeah, that's
I've seen films. I know.
The next big adventure in GPS comes in 1983.
Right.
And I love this story for a number of reasons, not least of which that it's absolutely true.
And it's the year that Raiders came out, so that's good.
It could also be the plot of a very bad movie. In 1983, a Korean airliner.
Right.
A 747,
right.
Flown by Air Korea, basically got lost and
flew into space.
Flew across the USSR's airspace.
Right.
And the Russians shot it down.
Sounds like the Russians.
I mean, this was full of people, right? This was a major, major tragedy.
They shot down a commercial airline.
They shot down a commercial airline because it intruded on their airspace.
Tragedy, it's murder. But okay, we'll let the diplomats hash that out. But fine.
Well, clearly they did.
Right.
Because, you know, Korea and Russia have such a good relationship now.
Russia were like, fuck you, you're Korea, who gives a shit? And that was it.
But what this did lead rise to was in 1983, President Reagan, my favourite president.
Jelly Beans himself.
Yeah, old, good old, I don't really know. Does he have any more nicknames?
Yes, but I can't think of them now.
I have a quote on a coffee, a coaster.
They called
that
him
I have
the
at home.
Something. The.
The president.
The president. No, not that. The something. Anyway, moving on.
No, I have a great quote from Reagan on a coaster
and
at home.
And that quote is, I don't know where I am. Nancy, can you help me? It's funny because he had
Parkinson's. That's on the other side.
Oh, no, Alzheimer's.
Yeah. No, no, it says you shouldn't drink coffee in the afternoon. It keeps you up at work or something like that.
It's good that you've remembered it so well.
Yeah. It's funnier on my coffee table.
Yeah, apparently.
But Reagan decided that enough was enough, and this technology that the US had built should be made open and available to all.
Oh, wow, okay.
So, literally...
So the anti-Tim Berners-Lee would appear.
Yeah. Tim, Reagan is cooler than you at this
Tim,
point.
Tim, sort your life out, mate. I don't care what they've got on you.
And the network wasn't finished. It wasn't global. It was good enough for military use.
Sure,
but
sure.
Reagan decreed, and so it was,
that
it be made available for general commercial use.
Oh, so mobile phones and all that kind of
Well, the mobile phone wasn't going to be invented for about another 5 years.
No, but
years,
I mean,
but
it's like, you know, like telecommunications and bouncing
However,
satellites around.
However, the suits, the uniforms, in fact, at the Pentagon weren't happy with this, and
they
demanded that we can't make this available to all and sundry because Johnny Foreigner... We'll use this.
Yeah.
You know, the commies will use it and all the rest of it. So the commercial version of GPS was deliberately hamstrung in that it was accurate enough to know if you were about to enter another country.
But not accurate enough to say...
It wasn't accurate enough to
not
do...
Not Google Maps accurate.
No. So it's probably accurate to within a couple of kilometres.
And that's bananas because I'll give you an example. I've recently gone on holiday, as well you know, and I downloaded an app called Maps.me, not a sponsor... And you download an offline you download your street map and whatever. And I turned off my mobile data because I was abroad and I don't want to get hammered with charges. And the GPS on your phone still works, it turns out. And it was literally, I opened the app and it was like, you are exactly you are stood on the corner of this road. Like, disturbingly bloody accurate. And that's on my phone. So back in the day, it was like, you've crossed a border, you've not crossed a border, but they wouldn't let them be too accurate.
No.
We can cut that bit out. It was very interesting.
I liked it. It was good. It was you know, true to life. Around about 1994, and the Americans have finished launching satellites. They've got about 23 birds in orbit,
right?
Which is enough for true global coverage.
So, sorry, the American military have got 23 satellites in orbit.
They've got a lot more than 23, but they've got 23 GPS satellites.
GPS ones. So, yeah. I mean, didn't they have the whole Star Wars project and stuff?
Like, yeah, they had loads of stuff
shooting
going
lasers to knock down nukes in midair and all that shit.
Yeah, this is Reagan's less fine hour. But, yeah. Hey, he made it available.
Pretty cool idea, though.
Yeah?
Pretty okay. cool idea. Space lasers.
All sorts of problems with it, but never mind. So, bring us forward to present day. There's only one major milestone, which is about May 2000.
Right.
The restriction between military and commercial use is lifted.
Only 17 years ago?
Yeah. So in May 2000, we now get access as...
Like proper GPS Joe positioning.
Public, to accurate GPS positioning down to a couple of meters.
Ago. Yeah. So weird. It's one of those things where it's like you walk around with Google Maps on your phone and you feel like it's just always been there. It's 17 years ago. I was 17.
I'm not doing the math.
17. Anyway, so gone.
He's singing again.
Chulula not happy with my decision to sing in the podcast.
And this brings us up to now, where we've all got GPS receivers all over the place, and we'll talk a bit more about those in a sec. But there are currently 31 active satellites in the US military's GPS network. Right. Really, really important to bear in mind that the GPS that we know and love is still a military asset.
So, like, when you use Google Maps or whatever, you're actually using the positioning from the military satellites. Google haven't got their own GPS satellites.
Not yet. Terrifying. Google sat.
Yeah, I don't need Google to be...
Wow.
They already know everything about what I do on the internet. They don't need to be physically looking at me the whole time as well.
What's really interesting is that, obviously, various jurisdictions... and various countries are not happy about the fact that the only source for
GPS
the Americans.
Is the American military,
So there's actually another four, I think, or five...
countries that have military satellites?
Yeah.
There's no corporations that have GPS.
Not yet. The Russians launched their own system. This is called the Global Navigation Satellite System, which I love because this is GLONASS. GLONASS, even.
GLONASS.
It sounds very Slavic.
John.
Yeah.
It would be. It's
the European Union have their own.
Right.
Theirs is called Galileo.
Right.
Which is kind of cool. China, of course, have one, which is the Beidou. I don't know if I'm saying that right or not.
In that terrifying Apple village where everyone keeps killing themselves.
India... Who, bizarrely, are really big in telco
They've got one
called Navic.
Yep.
And the Japanese have probably the coolest named...
It's definitely the best one.
It's the Quasi-Zenith Satellite System.
It's badass.
I don't even know what that means, but it sounds cool.
Who cares,
When we talk about GPS for the rest of this segment, we're going to be talking predominantly about who gives a crap which satellite we're talking to.
Because that's the question I was going to ask is, so do different corporations like Google or Apple, there's Apple Maps and there's Google Maps and whatever, do different corporations make different deals with different military, or are they predominantly all
America? Well, no, because this is, again, go back to how this actually works. We haven't really talked about that yet, but this is radio signals that are beamed from space, and all you need is a suitable decoder.
So it's still just radio signals.
Yeah, you could pick this up with something you could knock up in your garage.
In the sky.
Yeah. Receiving from a piece of glass. We don't transmit.
Sure, yes, sorry.
So what you tend to get is most of the GPS devices use the US network. It's the oldest, it's the most established. A number are starting to come out with additional providers.
Right.
Built in because it just gives them access to more satellites.
Right.
So they can get more accurate fixes. Yeah, of course, yeah. There's a bit of redundancy in there.
So what's... Right, if we're receiving on my phone, you are here, mate. Thanks very much. You've just run round the reservoir three times. I've mapped you or mapped my run, whatever. What is beaming the signal that tells me where I am in relation to that? Is there a thing beaming it from somewhere on Earth that bounces off the satellite that bounces down to my phone?
No. This is the maths bit.
Oh, brilliant.
Sorry. And bizarrely, it's geometry.
Perfect. That's neat, isn't it?
So, before we get into how GPS actually works, which is a process called trilateration.
Fantastic. I can't wait.
Let's take a very simple example.
Jesus. Yeah, that would be great.
Can you remember something called Pythagoras' theorem?
Yes.
A squared equals B squared plus C squared.
The square of the hypotenuse is equal to the square of the other two sides.
Bang on.
Fucking hell. This is why we should do the tech segment first, man.
Now, imagine, and you're going to have to imagine, because this is an audio medium and I didn't bring any paper.
I mean, I'm acting out.
That you have a straight line
Right.
And you are somewhere on that straight line.
Uh-huh.
Right? And if you have a series of three transmitters...
Right.
...somewhere above you...
Ah, you can, like, triangulate...
Right.
Your position.
Exactly. And bear in mind, triangulation works not necessarily on signal strength, but on time.
Oh, so longitudinal.
Kind of.
Nah.
It's the same kind of basic thing, but all of the GPS satellites carry incredibly accurate clocks.
Right.
Like atomic degree level clocks.
Okay.
And they are synchronized regularly to ground stations who do transmit to them
right.
from
to
atomic
right.
clocks.
Yeah. Right.
They are
okay.
the most accurate source of time in the world, second only to the clock that sends them the time.
Sure, of course. All right, okay.
So you know what time it is at that one, you know what time it is at this one, you know what time it is at the third one, and yeah. you basically take a reading off of all of them, what time is it?
Right, okay.
They all start transmitting at the same time, but because they are potentially further away, you get slight differences.
Right, so they transmit at the same time, but because of the distance away, they arrive at different times.
Yeah. Which means that basically a combination of some fairly simple maths on a 2D example,
yeah.
and you can work out exactly where you are relative to not just two birds, which would give you a triangle,
right?
But two other birds, which
By the
gives
way,
you another
I love
triangle.
That you're just referring to them as birds now.
Well, they are birds. It
makes you sound like a real badass.
Yeah.
It's awesome. Very
cool. NASA qualified. and the two other pairs. So you can actually get a grand total of 1, 2, 3 readings.
Yep.
And use those to correlate and work out exactly where you
are relative
to the satellites and therefore relative to the Earth.
Right.
Right, that's exactly how GPS works, except it does it using spherical geometry rather than plane geometry.
Which is literally a third dimension of
it's
complication.
It's considerably more complicated.
Of course, yeah, yeah.
And this is why I was going to bring along a thing that we could do this, we could put the numbers in, but after our fun with exponentialism last time, I thought the less math
you know
we actually try and do live...
This is a podcast where you speak to an idiot about stuff that is very, very high level and very complicated.
So,
I must say, you're doing a very good job today. This is better when I haven't had, like, 8 pints.
So what we end up with is a situation where, traditionally, a GPS receiver just reads radio signals from these satellites.
Right, okay.
All of which are broadcasting at the same time, they're broadcasting at the same time, and then a whole bunch of clever maths happens on a chip somewhere in that GPS receiver, which are totally commoditized
now,
right?
All the stupid clever math, and yeah.
And it will then convert those signals into a longitude and a latitude. In other words, where you actually are.
So actually,
on
it's
the Earth.
The same as the sextant, except using mirrors and radios and special space math.
Yeah. One of the coolest things that they actually do in modern GPS is they make use of something called Doppler.
Right.
I like Doppler, if only because...
Oh, no, I think I know what the Doppler effect is. That's when an ambulance drives past you and it goes...
It's basically a shift in frequency if something
yeah, yeah.
is moving towards you or away from you.
Yeah, yeah.
So they can use that to determine...
So that's
where
like when a Formula One car drives past you and it sounds yeah. different when it's right by you or away from you. Yeah, okay.
It's also why things, when you're looking at them, technically go more red.
God help me, I learned that from the Big Bang Theory.
Science, kids.
I wish I was dead.
It's popular. Stay
anyway.
In school. But not for too long. A combination of all of these different triangulation points, some really crazy maths, because honestly doing maths on a sphere is a nightmare.
Right, yeah.
Well, not
I've
for...
been doing maths on a sphere for many years, and it's always been a nightmare.
And the Doppler effect means that we now have this situation where we can directly map our position to within potentially about half a metre.
Yeah, I mean, that's exactly it, isn't it? It's like... Google Maps or whatever is like bananas accurate. It's, you know, it's unnervingly accurate, perhaps, which is why you can track how far you run and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah,
you ran 6.15 kilometers or whatever, and you know it's banana, and that's why it doesn't show you running along in the middle of a lake when you're running around a lake and stuff like that. It's yeah.
So we've now got this technology, and it is now ubiquitous because they built it into every single smartphone pretty much since I don't know the last 10 years.
Yeah.
You can also buy, you know, a GPS receiver on Amazon will cost you... one with maps will cost
like,
you
like
about
TomToms
50 quid.
And all that kind of
yeah.
stuff.
An actual
yeah.
GPS receiver, something that yeah. just receives the coordinates and converts it, you can pick up for like a tenner.
Oh, wow,
they are
really?
Dirt
okay.
cheap.
Yeah.
Which also means you can access the most accurate time source in the world for about a tenner.
Or you could just find a speaking clock.
Yeah, even that.
Is that done off satellites?
They talk to the same atomic clocks as the satellites do, and frankly, I've got a 10 quid box. Immediate, accurate time.
Amazing, yeah.
Yeah, no messing. So let's have a think about some of the modern uses. And this is the geostar bit of the podcast. The most obvious is navigation.
Yep. I've not stopped saying Google Maps the whole time, yeah. So yeah, indeed.
But it's not just Google Maps. Yeah, this is navigation for things like planes. The whole reason that Reagan opened this up was to allow airlines to know where the hell they were.
Yeah.
Prior to this, they were doing it all using weird combination of dead reckoning.
Crazy,
and
isn't it? It's like track a plane across borders, also find your phone in your house.
Yeah.
it's
nuts.
And
obviously, motorised transportation has been revolutionised by this, because not only do you know where you are,
but presumably, all those self-driving Teslas and all that stuff, they must all operate by GPS as well then, right?
They've got a GPS chip. They read their local surroundings using something else, but at the core of it is GPS.
I mean, that's a whole different podcast of how they work, but yeah, they must navigate themselves using the same technology.
Stay tuned for S and self-driving cars, at which point we'll hopefully arrive in one.
That would be amazing.
But we've got a way to go before that.
Yes, I would suggest so.
So all of these smart cars, everything else, is all to do with GPS. We've also now got situations where you can do transmitted awareness of a vehicle's location, which is kind of useful if you run, say, a shipping line or a trucking company.
Yeah, of course.
You can know where everything is. And this actually comes on to something that we refer to as, I've got to be careful here, technically it is GPS positioning transmission, aka LoJacking.
Oh, you like they LoJack cars and all. I've seen that in films. We can track it because it's a squad car and it's LoJacked. And
the reason we have to be careful is because LoJack is actually a trademark.
Oh, okay.
But fundamentally, it's a trademark that's become it's hit common usage. And basically, it's the idea that you have a GPS receiver and a transmitter, a central control room, or what have you. And again, these
are
cheap
as chips. If I've heard of it, it's definitely common usage, because I mean, I think it's in every cop movie ever. It's okay, they're in a squad car or whatever.
Yeah, we got them.
Lost our dog, but it's okay. The dog's LoJacked.
Or they snap a little satellite tracker onto the back bumper and it blinks.
It's always
your covert spy device
is
going to blink.
They're always magnetised, aren't they? It's so
weird. That makes sense. So does the matte black bit. The blinking red LED is kind of a bit pointless.
Also, you know it's on because you haven't already turned it on. A switch would be fine. But, films we can do.
Most common thing that's LoJacked is vehicles.
Sure, yeah.
Second most common thing that's LoJacked?
Pets. Really?
Closely followed by spouses. Yeah, sat trackers for dogs, cats.
Yeah, yeah.
Not hamsters.
Well, I LoJacked the wife by buying her an iPhone. It's the best.
Yeah. Now, what's really kind of intriguing about the whole GPS revolution is it's meant that we can literally drive from anywhere to anywhere. Obviously, there have been some notable screw-ups when
people
trust the GPS. But I see this as pure Darwinism.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah. No, I absolutely agree.
We shouldn't
if you're dumb
even
enough
try
to drive
them.
Into a river because GPS tells you, we probably don't need your bloodline.
We could just don't breed.
To put it bluntly.
There are another couple of commercial applications. In fact, there's tons of commercial applications. Things like archaeology and, bizarrely...
How so with archaeology?
Well, knowing where the site is quite useful.
Oh, right, okay.
Being able to say the corner of the dig is here, the corner of the dig is here,
yeah, sure,
and then bang.
Yeah, yeah.
The big thing that's been revolutionised is agriculture.
Really?
Yeah, yeah. Tracking even driven equipment, but knowing that you've actually covered all of your massive farmland.
Oh, so like combine harvesters
that can
do the whole thing, not Insomnia, like in Interstellar, the GPS-driven combine harvesters that don't have a driver. Turn around, drive back the other way.
And myriad others.
Yeah.
The next geo on our list is kind of cool, but kind of creepy. So you might want to get your tinfoil hat on, I'm afraid. This is a concept called geofencing.
Geofencing?
Geofencing is the idea that we can bound an area using satellite navigation to say you're either in it or you're not.
Right.
And this was originally a concept that was designed to prevent things from leaving an area. Think an ankle tag.
So you're under house arrest or whatever. Sure.
And it comes in really handy for certain scenarios like... mental health, where you will literally track all the patients.
Okay, yeah. And also like animals, like they tag animals, right? In the wild, they put their thing in the ear, and then they
and
can
making
see,
sure that they haven't left the reservation.
Good reasons for using it, and
they
then
haven't
also,
gone off the reservation.
And then also people just following everyone around with their phones.
The trouble is that, of course, knowing where something is in relation to something else, and adding into that the fact that we all now carry GPS transceivers. Receivers, rather, makes things a little bit tricksy when it comes to the wonderful world of marketing.
Of course. Oh, you're nearby a McDonald's. How about you go to that McDonald's?
Exactly. So geofencing was originally a safety mechanism and very useful, has now
but
been
like
perverted to try and sell you hamburgers and Coke. Thanks for that.
Last thing I need is some Coke. Oh, you mean Coca-Cola. Okay.
Another really popular geo, and this only came about in kind of around about early 2000 when they dialed the accuracy of the commercial GPS up to 11.
I think I know what you're going to say. Yeah.
This is the bizarrest, albeit quite intriguing pastime called geocaching.
So I've got a friend that does this, and he is, well, he's a weirdo. I mean, that's a given. Seb, if you're listening, you're a weirdo. And I get the attraction, but I did it one time with him, and then I was like, oh, we just walked for like an hour and a half to find a small plastic box that's like, well done, got written in it or something. I get it, I guess, but it's weird.
You're talking to the wrong person if you're looking for validation on this particular hobby. I don't get it either. No, it's kind of like a treasure hunt, but powered by space technology.
It's like a treasure hunt.
And that's making it sound way cooler than it actually
is.
No,
exactly. It's a treasure hunt, except there's not any treasure.
But it is a global phenomenon.
Yeah. No, it is massive. You know,
it swept the Earth.
Yeah. I've been in other countries.
I'm looking at a map of Jersey. I'm going to take a screenshot of this now.
I've been in other countries with this guy, and he's been like, oh, there's one nearby. And I'm like, who cares? We're in a pub. Unless it's here, I don't care.
This is a map of Jersey, which is a tiny island, 9 miles by 5, and these are all of the geocaches in Jersey. There's literally like 10.
There's loads, yeah.
There's even one in St. Martin by a place called Mike's House.
Yeah, yeah. The prize is I get to swear at you. Get out of my house, you weird geocachers! Fuck off! Ah! It's great stuff.
It would
it's
almost
hours
be
of fun. Jesus, scary. I might just do that, just to do that.
There's nothing stopping
you. What are you doing in my garden? Fuck off! That's ingenious. I get to swear at strangers like 3 times a day. Oh my god, I'm definitely doing that.
I see, you know, give you a Nerf gun or something.
Yeah.
And you can just write on the front, geocaching sucks.
Or a gun. Dunk. No, just a paintball gun. A paintball gun would be enough.
Yeah, exactly.
We don't condone shooting people,
we
even
do
if they are
guns
on your land.
Just get off my land.
Yeah.
That's yeah, it's the Jersey way.
I think you need something that can carry some form of message. Yeah. I suppose being shot in the face with a baseball is a
nothing,
message.
The best message is searing pain and being covered in red paint.
I mean, I'll be honest, the whole thing about this was we were meant to wax lyrical about geocaching, but I don't get it, you don't get it,
don't
I've
get
done
it.
It.
I know I've done it.
The
I've
most
done
exciting
it.
One that
it's
I could
like
an, have done.
It's like a walk with a very, like, oh my god, this is going to be great. With like, it's like an anticlimactic walk, which is really saying something, because walks aren't exactly the most exciting things in the world, are they?
Consider you could just walk to a pub.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly, if every geocache was just, oh, and then they give you beer.
The one I was really excited about was, for those listeners who don't know Jersey, there is a small island / sandbar to the north of the island called the Ekrehoes. Uh-huh. There is actually a geocache on the Ekrehoes.
Oh, really? Okay.
And I was there with a friend who is also a geocacher.
Right.
He was really, really excited about this. And I was like, actually, this one is kind of cool, because this one is a bit remote. We had to get on a rib to get there.
The Ekrehoes is like one of the most beautiful places that I have ever been in my life. It is insane. It is, honest to God, one of nature's legit wonders. And there's some guy scrabbling around looking for a Tupperware box with, well done, you found a geocache
no,
on
no,
it.
It gets better.
The seals and dolphins and all sorts of amazing business. And he's like, no, but, you know,
there's also
got a box,
what do they call it? The egrets? Right. There's a type of seabird that nests almost exclusively at the Ekrehoes.
Yes.
I can't remember exactly what type of seabird it is. Feel free to let me know. And the geocache was directly underneath their nesting site.
Oh, perfect.
So as a result, the entire thing was completely roped off. We weren't allowed anywhere near it.
Oh, wow. So you went all the way.
I didn't go
but
there
again,
just for that. I went there for a beer and a bar.
I was going to say, the great thing is that the Ekrehoes, again, is one of the most beautiful places in the whole world.
But it did mean that I was denied the limited fun of finding said Tupperware
box. You were denied
box.
The very anticlimactic pleasure of finding a box.
Before we got onto satellites in pop culture.
Yes.
Other cool things that begin with geo. Go on. Let's run the board.
Geo. Yes. Geo, yes. GeoCities.
GeoCities. This is a classic. Anybody who was on the web in the 90s had a GeoCities homepage?
Put your hands up. It's okay. It's a podcast. You can put your hands up. There you go. We've got 2 hands.
Actually, I've got my hand up and I'm lying. I didn't. I was an Angel Fire guy.
Ooh.
I used Angel
now you're
Fire.
Bragging.
I didn't use GeoCities. That was too fucking common. Our producer is suggesting that she had one of those as well. Yes, fair enough. Thereby proving that even in the early days of the web, you know, you could never have too many
Okay, so I know the words, and I said it by accident, so you're going to have to tell me what GeoCities is.
GeoCities was an online community, but it allowed you to build your first homepage.
Yeah, so that was a website place, right? Like it was almost like a MySpace-type thing, like a Facebook-type thing.
Yeah,
you could build your own homepage.
It didn't have any opinions about what you were meant to do there. It was just a space where you could be...
A blank page, you could just make a page.
But it was all organised around this concept of a city, and it had boroughs and kind of districts,
Which
were basically just bits that went on the front of your domain name. And
you had the world's longest domain name, I would assume.
It was horrific.
I'm at geocities.com/...
It was a fairly common thing to put it in your email signature.
Yep.
You'd be like, yeah, visit my homepage at geocities.com/...
I like the Foo Fighters. You should go there and listen to an embedded thing of Avalon.
As with all of these kind of social networks, it did have some cool stuff on it.
And a lot of porn.
I just can't remember. No, porn-free zone. Well, allegedly. Because there was plenty of porn elsewhere on the internet, as ever. So other things that begin with G. Somebody at some point is going to tell me why the hell geometry begins with geo.
We talked about geometry. We talked about it when we talked about satellites. They used geometry.
Yeah, but that's not a good enough reason to have it linked to the Earth.
I don't know.
Linguistically.
Because Greeks, man.
In fact, hang on a minute. Alex, sister of mine, if you're listening to this, this is what's my sister Alex, not the other listener Alex. See, we do have at least two listeners.
We have two Alexes.
I'm not sure that my sister listens. But if you do, you did this kind of as a degree. Geometry. Sort that shit out.
Pay you any money, that's not something they teach in the course. They're not like, so geometry, we're going to learn about geometry. First thing we should do is learn the entomology of the word.
Yeah.
Etymology.
No, she didn't do
entomology.
She didn't do geology, she did linguistics.
Oh, okay. Oh, then in which case, yeah, sort yourself out, Alex. Yeah. Jesus.
Also, I've just made it somebody else's problem.
Yeah, perfect.
Which makes me feel much better about myself. Satellite navigation in pop culture. Geosats. In
so it's
pop
like
culture.
Every 90s movie.
It is. There's satellites.
Presumably when it became commercially available. From
yeah, it was kind of a hot button topic.
So it's like...
It's gone a bit cold now.
There's like 400 James Bond films.
Well, there are, but there's only one that really uses GPS as a plot point.
Yeah, of course.
This is Tomorrow Never Dies, the worst Bond film.
Ricky J.
Very, very close to being one of the worst Bond films.
Ricky J can throw a card into a melon from like 30 metres. It's incredible.
It's a saleable skill.
I mean, he's made a career out of it, to be fair to him, but, you know.
What happens to the melon? Or does it just sit there with a card stuck in it?
It's not like it slices the melon. No, it doesn't cut it in half. I mean...
You see, that'd be useful.
If you slice a melon from 30 paces with a deck of playing cards, it would take him fucking ages. It's a bit labour-intensive.
I'll wait.
So anyway
yeah, Tomorrow Never Dies, over the GPS network.
At the bazaar, at the beginning.
Yeah. They buy the GPS encoder so
which
they can reprogram
really
the satellites.
Which is in that specific box, which happens to fix into every machine that they use it for.
Yeah, and also
it
has,
that gap.
Has a weird fixture in James Bond's car's glove box.
Yeah, yes, it does.
It's like,
and it's just like a whole bunch of like
GPS
red
encoder.
Numbers, a whole bunch of red numbers, digital numbers. That
well, that's fair enough. That's actually semi-legit, right?
Yeah.
That's kind of like a continuously upgrading, continuous updating encryption seed.
Yeah,
that's a real thing.
But I mean, they use it in other James Bond films, because that one with Korea, I forget now, Die Another Day, right?
Yeah.
With that fantastic Madonna song.
Is that the one with the best theme song ever?
Carolina's favourite song in the whole world. She's going to love that. Oh, I'm in trouble again for a podcast. God damn it.
How do they use it in Die Another
Day? So they're firing the space laser down into the landmine place between North and South Korea. Like the area between North
that's
and South
just a
Korea
big ass laser on a satellite.
And they're firing, but they're using GPS to position that.
No, I
they use GPS to fire it
driving,
to the ground.
I don't know.
so tenuous.
I'm trying to think. Are there any other movies where they actually use GPS in a serious way? Not masses. I'm looking at our producer, who's just
texting,
swiping left. Huh. Brave choice.
Noise.
so, and of course, there's upcoming. What have we got?
We got Geostorm.
Oh Jesus.
This is the best. So, I'm going to fill you in on Geostorm.
I'm
there
aware,
is,
but
there
go
is a,
on.
There is a series of satellites in space, in the space place, that keep our super fucked up weather in place. And they stop, global warming has got so bad that it's going to, super weather is going to destroy the whole world. So they use satellites to stop the storms happening. But then, they get hijacked. And the only person that has the codes to stop the satellites is Andy Garcia, who, by the way, is the president. And also, he gets kidnapped. So also, Carl Urban, who is in it, by the way. Not Carl Urban. Who's the other one that looks like Carl Urban? Let's say Carl Urban. That guy. This man. He was in it. That guy. That one type. Gerard Butler. Him. Yes, Gerard Butler. So he has to, first of all, he has to go to space to sort out the satellites. And then he has to then save the president from being a hostage. And that's definitely Geo. So,
I think it's Geo in name only.
Yeah, pretty much.
So we're moving on.
The core. We've already said that.
The core is not.
It's geo. They have to dig through the ground. That's geo. It can't be more geo.
I've also been shown a note by our producer,
Cholula,
saying Geopets. What the fuck is a geo?
Oh yeah, Geopets. That's like a shitty Tamagotchi or something, right? Yeah. Right, I remember that. If you couldn't afford a Tamagotchi, you definitely know what a Geopet is.
I'll be honest, I could afford a Tamagotchi. I saved long and hard for my Tamagotchi. I kept it alive for about.
For me, the point of Tamagotchi was just seeing how fast you could kill them. Is that a precursor to a serial killer? I wasn't killing cats.
At one point, I was actually researching on the early internet how it is possible to replace the Tamagotchi's battery without losing the circuit.
Oh, really?
Yeah. It was going strong.
Wow.
I didn't.
It was a really memorable day on your 35th birthday when you lost your virginity. I'm sorry.
Thank you.
Jesus.
Thank you.
So yeah, I mean, I know.
I think that said though, that the whole Tamagotchi Geo
low-jacking,
fun thing.
Low-jacking is a huge thing in films.
Low-jacking is massive.
Yeah, it always comes up.
And to be honest, satellite tracking of people is a thing.
Like the whole Bourne movies are predicated upon tracking him via satellite. That's the entirety
of
those four Bourne movies.
You've got this idea that you can just zoom right in.
Yeah.
But that's not really the kind of stuff we're talking about.
Do you think they can do that?
Yeah.
They can check us out sitting at the pub?
Yeah, why not?
I mean, why they would want to, I don't know, but.
Well, they can't check me out.
I'm flipping them the bird right now. Yeah, suck it, Gene Hackman. I'm actually doing it, which is the sad thing. Jesus.
And Gene Hackman's actually doing it. Gene, stop it. Geopets kind of give you this idea that one of the more recent forward-looking elements of GPS and positioning is this concept of augmented reality. So, like, the idea of, say, you've heard of Pokemon, right? Pokemon Go?
Yes, I've heard of Pokemon Go, of course.
Pokemon Go works because of GPS.
Yeah, because...
I mean, it works because of a whole bunch of other shit as well.
Because the Pokemons are in a fixed place, and when you walk around, you see them, and then you,
Algorithmically, they're generated, but you walk around on a real map.
Yeah.
So this whole idea of augmented reality only works if you know where
you
are
a real map.
in reality.
Yeah, of course, yeah.
GPS, bada bing, bada boom.
Yeah.
Which, I think, means... Right. It's just about time for the amazing fact.
Amazing.
That may or may not be amazing.
Is it not that amazing?
I find it quite amazing, but it is a bit nerdy, this one, I'm afraid.
Right.
So,
God forbid we'd be nerdy in our podcast.
Little bit more maths. Are you familiar with a chap called Einstein?
I've met him.
Albrecht Einstein? Yep.
Oh, I met you. I thought you meant Philip Einstein.
What, Phil?
Phil. Next door.
Works down the bookies next door, yeah?
Yeah.
No.
You mean Albert Einstein?
Albert.
Physicist. Patent clerk.
Yes. Patent clerk, come good.
Yeah.
Taylor's oldest time.
Einstein did his best work as a patent clerk.
He did.
Do you know how much a patent clerk makes? I prefer the academic. I'm just quoting Ghostbusters now.
You
Go
are.
On, please.
Yeah. Wait.
Yeah, next
we'll
one.
We'll get to it.
Next one, sorry.
But no, so Einstein posited a whole bunch of theories. He was a scientist. It's what they do.
It's kind of the deal.
But one of his theories, or two of his theories, were general relativity and special relativity.
Right.
One of the properties of combining those two theories is kind of cool. And it suggests that the faster you go,
right,
the slower time moves.
Sure.
So this is the first indication that we've had in modern science.
I've seen science fiction movies.
That time is not a constant.
You talk about Interstellar right now, aren't you?
No. Because
they go so fast?
That's gibberish. Pure gibberish. I mean, it looks pretty.
Kit Walker was a scientist. He was a physicist. It was not Kit Walker. Somebody. Anyway, move on.
The GPS satellites are in orbit.
Yar.
Up there, he says, pointing. Again, right. Works really well on a podcast. That said, if you don't know what up is, then seriously,
sort of. Yeah, fucking hell, you are really lost.
And they are moving pretty quick.
Pretty fast.
Because they're in a high orbit.
I've seen
orbit.
Gravity, I know how fast they move.
Yeah. And it has been calculated, and since verified, that the clocks on a GPS satellite would run, relative to us down here on Earth, 38 seconds faster per day.
Right, so one's up in the sky.
38.
30 seconds.
Would run 38 microseconds, that's 38 millionths of a second, faster than the same clock down on Earth.
Right, per day.
Per day.
Okay, so Yeah, which isn't a lot until it is a lot because they're up there
well,
for
no,
so long.
What it means is that these amazingly calibrated clocks that are designed to do nothing but tell the time as accurately as possible.
Time runs differently when you're up in space.
No, time moves differently when you're moving fast.
Right, okay.
But it means in 72 years, those incredibly calibrated timekeepers will have gained a whole second. Which is huge.
That isn't a huge amount of time, yeah. So is that why when the DeLorean goes 88 miles an hour, it travels through time? Because it's going so fast.
Yeah, and also because, frankly, a DeLorean going more than 60 without bits falling off it is a fucking miracle.
Indeed. It's a stunt car. So over how many years? 72 years.
72 years.
Second, they gain a second.
Yeah. As a result, this is actually built into the system. They have to program the satellites to adjust them back to Earth time.
That into, or you compute, you plug that into, like, interstellar travel, when you're travelling many, many, many light years, which is a distance of, like, measurement of distance, not of time, surely that actually could rack up quite a lot.
Yeah.
If you're flying to fucking Mars or something, that could actually...
This is why it's the amazing fact. We have solid proof of a theory that means that space travel is kind of terrifying. Not least of which because you're blasting off into the unknown. But
we also have solid proof that time is complete bullshit. We've just made it up and you can change it however you like.
As I think I've said before, time is an illusion. Lunchtime doubly so.
I don't think you have. And I'm quite glad you haven't.
Thank you, Douglas Adams. So there we go. That's GEO satellites in a nutshell.
That's really good. That is, honest to God, I'm so glad we did the tech segment first, because if I was really pissed right now, this would have been an extremely painful trip.
Oh, wait, what? The time moves slower than the time.
Wait, what? What time is it? It would have been a bad time.
I'd like to thank all of you for listening. This has been We're Drunk and We Know Things. We have been recording in the beer garden at the back of the Prince of Wales Tavern in St Helier, Jersey. The show is being produced by Cholula Fandango. We've been lubricated very nicely by Circadian.
By Ringwood, yeah.
Being brewed by Ringwood. Tune in next month when we'll be talking about hacking. Thank you very much. See you again.
Love you.
Okay, we're done.
Bieber.
Stop it. I blame you for the moonlit sky and the dream that died with the eagle's flight. I blame you for the moonlit nights when I wonder why are the seas still dry. Don't blame me. Why did GPS become a thing? Well, we've got a couple of precursors. The Russians.
Sorry, does our producer need to take a phone call right now? No, you're not busy. That's fine.